From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made on a piece of land that juts out into the water near Sodus Point. It's called Freedom Hill, but depending on who you talk to and which map you're looking at, it might be called something else. Until 1963, the hill carried a racial slur in the name. I'll euphemize. It was called N-Word Hill. That's because, according to the local historian, the hill was a popular place for fugitive slaves to hide out while trying to escape bounty hunters that were waiting for schooners looking to go to Canada in the 1850s. And the bounty hunters likely created the name as a slur, perhaps a way to let one another know where to search. The federal government made a change to federal maps in 1963, and the N-word became then known as Negro. That hill became Negro Hill. Over the decades, some locals started referring to it as Freedom Hill, but on some navigational maps, it's still listed as Negro Hill. Many locals still refer to it that way, too, and some say they don't want to change it. There are more than two dozen places across New York State that contain the word Negro in the name, and the question of how to learn from history is a potent one. Holidays, park names, statues, names of landmarks, names of hills, these are widely understood to be ways to celebrate and to honor. And the consistent argument against changing the name of, for example, Negro Head Point or Negro Hill, is that these names are part of our history, for good or for ill. Changing the names would not erase our history, but it could take away a chance to learn. But those who support changing names argue that we can learn from history without celebrating oppression or those who caused it. Man, the state of Alabama just celebrated their annual holiday commemorating the birthday of Jefferson Davis. Alabama state offices are closed the first Monday every June to honor the birthday of the only Confederate president. Jefferson Davis was not born in Alabama, nor did he represent Alabama, but the holiday continues. Should it be changed? Can we learn from the history of Jefferson Davis's life without giving him a holiday? And of course, we've seen the debates over Confederate statues. When WXXI's Veronica Volk set out to understand the views of people who live near landmarks in our state that have had racist names, she heard people reference the statues and the Civil War and even the racist carousel panel in Shalott that was removed several years ago. It all ties together, and this hour it's a chance to dig deeper into the mentalities that some Americans have regarding the preservation of racist place names. Our guests this hour include Veronica Volk, our colleague from WXXI News as a reporter and producer. Outstanding work on this. It's great to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Eric McNair, Vice President of Wayne Action for Racial Equity. Eric, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Michael Oberg is the founder of the Geneseo Center for Local and Municipal History and Distinguished Professor of History at SUNY Geneseo. Welcome back. Thanks for being here, Michael.
Thanks, Evan.
I have to say, Veronica, you know, this is one of those stories where my first appreciation was the fact that we heard it on WXXI News, it didn't make a caricature of this discussion, this debate. It gave it time to breathe. And yet, the first thing you told me was, oh my gosh, I've got so much more that you couldn't even fit into that
single
story.
I think in a lot of stories like this, you end up with a lot of tape that you don't really know what to do with. You have these long, complicated conversations with people where you can hear them kind of wrestling with their own biases and their own struggles in real time. So I really wanted a chance to play that for people because I think it's an important conversation to have, not just in our community, but at large, and it's a good time to have it. So actually, this all started because I'm the Great Lakes reporter, obviously, as you know. And in 2017, I was out in Port Bay, and I was talking to people about lake levels at the time. Not much has changed there.
Yeah.
So I ended up in my car with this woman who lives right on the water. And we were talking about, you know, just a couple things, the neighborhood. And she starts telling me this story where basically she said that when she bought her house, she was talking to a man who had lived there his whole life, who told her that the point that she lived on was called a name that included the N-word. I was blown away by this, and I'm not proud of this, but I kind of filed it away as some like racist urban legend. But then a couple weeks ago, our colleague Brett Dahlberg was talking about weird place names, and we ended up in a conversation about these place names that included the N-word. And we found out that there were 25 places across the state that now have the name Negro in them, but have aliases that were the N-word. And all this, you know, all these kind of things came together, and I started to think about, you know, how could this possibly be? It's 2019. You have federal maps that, you know, have these racial slurs on them. So the first place I went to was the Wayne County Historian's Office to talk to the historian there. His name is Peter Evans. Basically, my question for him was, why in the world did this come to be in the first place? How did this even start? And he and his assistant were really helpful in explaining to me all the history of the Underground Railroad here and how that might have come to be, showing me primary documents, spending hours with me. But eventually that led me to this question that I think is a is a logical kind of conclusion where it's like, how could this still be? Why have we not changed them? So I'm going to play some tape from my conversation with him. And I also want to just tell our listeners that I'm going to be playing a lot of raw audio today. And it's probably going to take up a little bit of time. But this cut is probably about a minute and a half. And you can hear Peter Evans kind of explaining to me why we should not change these names.
The only thing that I get worried about is, and a lot of historians have the same view, this wholesale renaming, tear down everything that had to do with representations of the South, of slavery, tear it all down, get rid of it. And I know I had that reaction when I first heard about Negro Hill being renamed. I really thought that that was, you know, I'm not saying it was good, but it's what it was. And should we ignore that? Because that takes some of the cultural situation away so that in the future, people don't understand what it was and what it was like and what it represented. And so they get a distorted or anemic view of what was really happening. Sure, you know, these statues of Civil War generals and things like that were put up during Jim Crow. Yeah, sure, yeah. But that represented a not very favorable view of America, but it was a real view. And I think to try to sweep it under the rug and not make that information available.
So he trails off here, but you get his point. He's kind of following this trail that I found so many times in so many interviews where people start talking about a racist place name and they end up talking about Confederate statues in the South. Or, you know, pick your own kind of racial or racist landmark. And one of the most interesting things about this cut actually made it into the piece, which you can listen to on our website, wxxinews.org. But one of the most interesting parts of this interview was later on when he started to kind of walk that back, and you could hear him struggling with his own biases in this next cut I'm going to play for you. At some point, he was telling me all about how much the times had changed since the naming of the hill and how he had seen a lot of progress in his life, which led me to my next question.
I think some people would say that maybe changing like the names of places that have racist names would be part of that progress. Like, do you think that there's a way to change names without erasing the history?
That's okay. But somewhere, and not every place, there ought to be a footnote that this was changed, and when it was changed, and how it was changed, and that's okay, you know? It's not a word we want to use anymore. Certainly, when I grew up in farms. My family owned farms, sort of like here. Matter of fact, many of the farmers here along the lakeshore here knew my family down in the Hudson Valley. And we had labor, and we treated them, we thought we were treating them well. But yet, you know, words like Negro were common usage. No, we did not use the N-I-G-G-E-R word. We didn't use that. But still, we called them Negroes. And, you know, so that's changed. You know, and that's the way I grew up. I don't think I was prejudiced, but that is a form of, you know, as a form of prejudice, I guess. And it's one I have to recognize that was part of my background. But those things can change. I can change. I think we all can change. Some of us can change the change process is a little easier for some of us than others.
So Evans wasn't the only historian that I talked to for this piece. I actually, like you mentioned before we came on, Evan, I spoke to another historian. His name is Bruce Farrington. He's the historian for Sodus Point. He had a ton of information about the hill and the Underground Railroad, which I found super helpful. But this next piece of tape that I'm going to play you is maybe one of my favorite pieces of tape that I collected throughout this process, where we actually had left the site and we were in his car. And I'm sitting in the back seat and he and his wife Edie are in the front seat. And we were just kind of kicking around. This happens a lot when you stop interviewing somebody and people start talking in this kind of very real and off-the-cuff way. And he started to ask me questions about what I was doing with this information and started getting a little bit more candid with me, and that's what I'm going to play for you now.
So, Veronica, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What is, you're researching all these places. What kind of, what are your thoughts about all this?
Yeah, well, what brought you to do this? You have to go far enough.
Yeah, I know, I just
want to keep going slowly, but
okay. I mean, honestly, I'm curious about whether or not locally these places are not just this hill, but other places with derogatory names are still referred to as that, and whether people understand or know the history and how those names came to be. I'm just kind of curious.
If I was to answer that question, I interview a lot of people. My wife and I interview a lot of people as a result of trying to get the history, which is, a lot of it is, well, I was the first Village of Sodus Point historian. Nobody up to that point had ever been an official historian. So almost all the information you have to get orally and from family tales. And I can tell you that the older generation, and I'm talking about people who are in their 80s, a number of them still refer to it in the derogatory term. The younger generation that know about it, it's pretty much Freedom Hill. So I'm hoping that expression is dying out, but it's like everything else. You have some people who think, oh, it's all right, that was just what they called it in those days. And, it was racist then, it's racist now. I'm sorry. In my opinion, there's no middle ground on it. There really isn't. It's a demeaning word.
I think a lot of people in Sodus and Sodus Point are not that prejudiced, though. They like the Newport family fine. There are a lot of other black
yes.
families and African American people in our community that are well accepted. And it's so, they're not, I mean, that's what it was called, but they don't think of it, that race is a terrible thing. So I don't think they're that prejudiced.
I
wonder, as a reporter, about whether or not having a history like that, having a name like that, creates an unconscious bias. That's the question that I have.
I don't know if they talk about it on a daily basis or anything, you know, it just is brought up occasionally. And
I know where you're coming from on that, and I have a tendency to agree. I just wonder. I wonder myself about that. I mean, it's very easy for people to say, oh, that's just what it was called. I don't mean anything by it. Well, you're perpetuating a derogatory, demeaning, and racist term. And, you know, you could also say in the 1940s, after Hitler was finally gone, well, I didn't know what he was doing with the Jews. But, if you didn't stand up, and you're partly complicit in it. So, I don't know, that's just my feeling on it. God, I would be happy I'd love to think that someday in this country we will not be having this discussion because it will be considered archaic and not worthy of discussion.
So I love that tape because...
Remind us who that was, by the way.
So that was Bruce Farrington. He's the historian for the Village of Sodus Point and his wife, Edie. And one of the things I love so much about that tape is because you can hear them disagreeing in their own, in their own car about where they come down on this.
And, you know, it's interesting. I'm just going to observe, and I know our guests in our second half hour, they're going to have a lot more to say than I am.
Sure.
My only observation is I'm not even sure they disagreed. She sounds like the kind of person who... It's hard for her to think of her community as racist.
Right.
And sometimes white people, generally speaking, struggle with that. They don't want to kind of accept that this may be a problem.
And if this isn't already abundantly clear, I want to be completely transparent about this. Every single person that I spoke with one exception, it was white for the story. Wayne County is 94% white. All the historians were white. Everyone who lived in these neighborhoods, to the best of my knowledge, was white. So there's a lot of white people talking to other white people about race in this, which is, I think, one of the things that made this story so challenging for me to tell. I mean, like, I'm white. I went into this being curious about, you know, something that I saw as completely racist. And we had a lot of internal conversations about some of the ethics of me covering this or me being the person to tell this story. But ultimately, we went through with it. And I think that kind of showing a lot of these conversations is going to, like, maybe help people understand a little bit more about their community.
Yeah.
So
you got two more pieces for us.
Got two more pieces. So after I talked to historians, I realized I had to actually talk to real people who lived in neighborhoods and who lived in these communities, which made me a little bit
historians
nervous.
Are real people, too, but I take the point.
That's not what I mean. Okay.
No, I take the point.
Not exactly. Okay, you know what I mean. So I went out to Graves Point Road, which if you look on a map right now, like if you look on Google Maps and you look up Graves Point Road, you will see at the end of the point there is a marker that says Negro Head Point. So I drove out there on a Saturday. I had absolutely no voice. And I kind of just went outside and started knocking on doors. And the first person I ran into was Dan Lochner. He's a resident on Graves Point Road. And I'm going to play a cut from my interview with him right now.
I'm a reporter with WXXI in Rochester. And I was wondering if I could talk to you for a second.
For what?
Well, I was driving through here and doing a story on lake levels. But I noticed the name of this place on Google Maps.
It's Graves Point Road. Graves Point.
Graves Point Road, but on Google Maps it says Negro Head Point.
Yes, that's correct.
I was wondering if you knew the history of that or if you...
I don't know the whole history of it. I think that goes way back from sailor times, which goes way back, so I don't know the whole history of it.
Yeah.
I wish the guy that owned this place, that used to own this place, was here.
How long have you been here?
I've been here for 38 years.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
I'm the last place right there. Okay. This isn't my place.
Okay.
That's my place.
All right, cool. Well, I mean, how does it feel to, you know that it used to be called that?
Well, it doesn't bother me any because I'm used to it.
Yeah.
So it's not, I don't look at it as a racial thing. It's just something that was named. It shows it on all the chart books.
Yeah, the navigational maps.
Yep, everything. On all the navigational maps, all the chart books, it shows it as Negro Head Point. So. Mm-hmm. And so it's not, I don't look at it as a discriminatory thing or anything, you know?
Yeah.
So
you called it Graves Point. Do you wish that the name were changed on those maps too?
No, it doesn't bother me. Okay. I don't care. It probably bothers somebody, but we have people of color fish right off our dock.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it doesn't bother them any. So they don't say anything, you know? So
yeah.
So it's just one of them things that's always been there, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, there are a lot of people that might say that they would want it to be changed just because it's uncomfortable and it reminds people.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I've never heard of anybody wanting to change it.
Okay.
Okay? So.
I'm just going to leave that one there and move on to the next one. And I would love to hear what our guests have to say about that. And also, I just want to say one of the reasons I'm playing this tape in full is because I don't want to quote people out of context. I don't want to make anybody look bad.
Yeah.
I don't want people to think that I'm out there trying to, like, play gotcha journalism. These are just real reactions from real people about kind of responding to some of the questions that I'm asking. So the next family I talked to, we're going to play a piece of tape from the Nyers. So I walked into their backyard. It's like total ambush. And there were six people sitting around this table. It's Fred and Marilyn Nyer and their children, Jill and Jack, and their grandchild's daughter, or their granddaughter. And you don't have to remember any of the names. I'm not going to, like, quiz anybody. But I just wanted to point that out because there's a real difference in how people feel about this issue based on age that I think this cut really represents. So I'm going to play that for you now.
Yeah, I was curious because you can see it right on Google Maps, and I was just wondering how you guys felt about that and how it, you know.
No, we don't say the word.
No.
I told her we have a map that states it.
I do.
Way
we have
back.
It.
Old, yeah, old
yeah
maps.
We have a map.
We've seen old maps posted, like, at the historical. Yeah,
framed. Isn't it framed?
Yeah, do you guys know why it was called that?
Yeah.
Do you know why? I don't know.
Well, didn't the Underground Railroad
Underground
go out
railroad.
To Canada?
Yeah, but I don't know if that's why it's called that.
Yeah, that's
you told me, I researched it.
Yeah, I'm almost positive.
The
they would go to Canada from here.
Yeah, I know that this place, not just this place, but also out in Sodus and stuff, was the last stop for a lot of like freedom seekers.
Right, and in Wolcott, there's a tunnel at the Four Corners between one of the buildings and to a the church right across the street.
The church that's on the corner.
Yeah, okay. And they discovered that when they were the jewelry girls.
Oh, yeah.
They found that.
Oh, on the corner?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just seems like such a derogatory name to have for a place.
I just, no.
I told her, I said, I bet you can't half the people word. On this point now don't even know
don't
it's
even
called
know it.
That.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Do you guys think it should be changed on the maps?
I hesitated to. It should, I think.
Yes.
But you can't change history.
And that's what
history.
I said too.
Yeah.
Said
what'd you say?
You can't change history. It's on
that's
old
like
historical
changing
maps.
That the
even though
it's
no one
carousel recalls. In Charlotte Beach, they took that down.
Well, I know.
Yeah. And no one refers to
I think
to
it should.
Well, she's
the young one.
Young one. And really, in all our lives, we never said that even.
No.
Never.
Ever.
Your grandma and grandpa.
But most of the streets out here are named after all the bigwigs that used to
live around here.
Live here that were with the railroad and the, yeah, Graves Point. Mr. Graves was what was he?
See, I personally think like it's a part of our history though, and I don't think we should lose our history.
Right.
Well, that's
just to be politically correct. I mean. I think we should understand it and know it, but I don't think we should change the map because it's not politically correct at this point in time. Just like I don't think we should be getting rid of the statues down south of the Confederate generals and so forth. It's part of the U.S. history. Maybe some of it is not politically correct, but we should understand it where it was in our history. That's
I mean,
just
we're
me.
Not from the South.
That's just me.
So we can't say, but right yeah. to us, these statues mean nothing. I mean, it was a war. And,
yeah.
And we're glad that it ended the way it did, but I'm sure the South at that time, and they're still, think about it, they still probably have animosity because.
So now on this map, it doesn't say N-I-G-G-E-R, it says N-E-G-R-O.
Yeah, what year is that map from? Do you know?
We bought this in town at a craft sale.
It's framed.
Does it say something on the back?
In the frame? I know that in 1964, they blanketly renamed all the places that with the N-word, with Negro instead.
Is that right?
So this is Negro Head, not
right.
The older map.
Wasn't there one on the wall at the restaurant down here? That I know we've seen it there before the restaurant was remodeled.
I didn't even notice
that this is that was a park over here. Desbro Park.
I don't know.
Well, guys, thanks for for talking to me. I really appreciate it.
So now you're with WXXI?
Yeah. So I'm kind of the lake reporter there, so I do a lot of reporting on lake levels. Also, you have to excuse me, I lost my voice. It's great for when you work in radio.
I am surprised that it's still listed in current maps, so.
Yeah, that blew me. I did not know that.
I don't think it should be that
way. All my friends do Graves Point when they type it in to get here. It's, you know, it gets you here.
Right.
And it was on Google?
If you go on Google Maps right now, if you just like look at, like, it just says Negro Head Point. And I know that other places, like out near Sodus, there was a Negro Hill that they renamed Freedom Hill.
Okay.
Which is kind of, I think, a way of kind of.
It's the same idea.
I wouldn't mind history, but changing the name.
Agreed.
Yes. Well, that I might be able to go with that. Freedom.
All right, so that was the Nyers. We have Marilyn and Fred, Jack, Jill, Jordan, and Michelle, who I forgot to mention earlier.
Thank you for sharing this wide variety
of sound with us that doesn't always fit into a piece. Veronica Volk, WXXI reporter and producer, who did this story that you might have heard, the shorter version. I mean, say shorter, still a long version, long story. It's a feature story on WXXI News just a few weeks ago. Let's get our only break of the hour, and when we come back, Eric McNair is the vice president of WARE, Wayne Action for Racial Equity. He's here. Michael Oberg, founder of the Geneseo Center for Local Municipal History and distinguished professor of history at SUNY Geneseo, is also here. And we digest what we've heard from Veronica's reporting next. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, when you drive around Rochester, there are plenty of places where you'll see luxury apartments going up, more luxury units for sale. Can luxury units turn into affordable housing? CityLab says maybe the answer is yes. We're going to try to better understand how that process works in Rochester and elsewhere Friday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Eric McNair is with Wayne Action for Racial Equity, which is what, by the way? Let our listeners know what WARE is.
WARE is an organization that started in the mid-'80s to kind of create an organization that met the needs of a group of a community, a group of people who felt like their needs weren't being met. They were underrepresented in the government, underrepresented in schools and the job place and the general community. And so we fight for racial and social justice for all. We want to make sure that everybody's voice is heard.
Now, if you're just joining us, listeners, the first half hour, boy, you missed extraordinary tape collected by WXXI's Veronica Volk for her reporting on racist place names. This country has a long history of hills and parks and places that are named often with the N-word, which, as Veronica mentioned, the federal government sort of changed the maps in 1963-64 to say the N-word became Negro, so N-word Hill became Negro Hill. But there's a lot of these places, more than 24 in New York State alone. The question is, should those names still exist? How do people feel living there? Eric, I'm just going to let you lead off here. You heard a lot from people in these various areas, historians, residents. What's your first takeaway there?
My first take is, wow, that was a lot to take in and a lot to consider. It's very interesting to hear people say, well, we don't use the N-word. We don't do this and we don't do that as justification. But, you know, I grew up in Wayne County, and they do. I know they do. I spoke to my spouse who is Caucasian, and I said, you know, talking about Freedom Hill and the Maxwell Settlement and all the work that we've done with that to make that widely known and about the rich history. And when I said Maxwell Settlement, when I said Freedom Hill, had no idea. People didn't know. People who lived in Soldiers their entire lives, and I would describe to them where this place was, they couldn't figure it out. But when I said the N-word Hill, oh, I know where that is. That's right down here, and they could tell me and pinpoint exactly where it is. So people are using the word. They're using it, and they're using it on a daily basis, and they're using it.
So when Veronica asked the question, does this sort of create an implicit bias, even an unknown bias, but when we preserve these names, is there a sort of a collateral damage to a community, whether they see it or not? What do you think?
I think there is a collateral damage. I think that these names that exist that are derogatory, it's a constant reminder to a community that, you know, you're a minority. It's a constant reminder that, you know what, we're considered less than. We're, you know, why should someone tell me what's offensive? And better yet, when I say it's offensive, you trivialize it by saying, hey, it's not that big a deal. Because you're just trying to be politically correct. It's not about political correctness, but it's about fairness and equality for everybody. It's about having equal opportunities to live where I want, to get the jobs that I want. And I don't think that this conversation will stop until we don't have to celebrate minorities having achievements and being CEOs or having money or good jobs or the first black person or African-American to be in this type of position. I don't think we're going to stop having this conversation until we can stop doing that.
Professor Oberg?
I agree with Eric that there's a lot going on in these statements. As a historian, right, looking in the longer term, places have always been renamed, and they're always contentious, right? I think it's almost a basic theorem of history, right, that those who have the power to name places are often reluctant to reluctant to change those names. And a number of the people you interviewed, Veronica, said in different ways that we don't want to change our history, or you can't change history. Of course you can. Of course you can. Historians ask questions. That's what we do. We ask questions about the past. You ask questions, why was this called this name? We ask questions. History is in a constant state of being revised as new questions are asked, as new people come into the historical profession. It used to be all white males in the historical profession. As the profession's gotten a little bit more diverse, the questions have changed. And Mr. Nyer, in that, I think it was the last clip you played, I'm flunking the quiz already, but he said, I think he said three times in the clip you played, he used the phrase politically correct. And Eric mentioned it too, how it's thrown out at him when he raises these questions. This is nothing new. I've been dealing with this in my own career since I started in 1994 with place names. And what we see, you know, when it just seems to me that when someone dismisses an entire field of inquiry, when someone dismisses a perfectly reasonable question about the past or a subject as being quote unquote politically correct, It drives me nuts, because I think it's the moral equivalent of calling someone in the 1950s a communist. It just shuts off debate. It shuts off discussion. And what it all too often leads to is a reflection of the discomfort of those people to talk about a past that is very painful, very hurtful, that is filled with anguish and discrimination and oppression.
What he said at one point was, I don't think we should lose our history by changing the map to be politically correct.
Yeah, and you don't lose anything. You don't.
That's the false choice I kept hearing in the interviews that Veronica was gathering. This false choice that, well, if we change N-word head point or N-word hill to Freedom Hill, then we lose our history. I don't understand. What? To me, that's a false choice, isn't it?
I live in Brighton. You live in Wayne County. These places weren't always called these names. We can go reconstruct the history. Veronica, you mentioned the documents. And Peter Evans is one of the best county historians. He really has a great operation. He has a lot of documents, right? He really knows where the material is. He does know his stuff. And so many of the town historians, government-appointed historians in the state, really know this material. You go ask the questions and you do the work. And that we're having this debate, I think it's a great thing. I don't think it's going to end. I agree with Eric. It's going to keep going. I don't think it's ever. I don't think we could trace the beginning. Certainly, it's been going on since what, 1963?
Well, but since before that, potentially.
Yeah, for sure.
And one of the questions that I'm hoping I can talk to you guys a little bit more about is, I started to wonder, and I you can hear me ask it in the tape, whether or not these place names create an implicit unconscious bias, whether or not just having a place named that. And I think about the tape with the Nyers, where they bring out a map, right, that has Negro Head Point on it, and they're showing me this map, and they're talking about how there's a map down at the diner, and there was almost this sort of, like, sick... no, that's wrong. I don't want to use that word. There was this kind of excitement about this... taboo thing that they were in possession of. And that struck me as something that was, that kind of confirmed my theory, which was that there was this bias that was occurring because they had this kind of pride in that name.
There's a pride in it. It's not offensive to them because it's okay. And everything that they've done up until now said that it was okay. And everything that they've said about it and the pictures they see said that it was okay. So they're proud of it. This isn't a naming issue. This is a race issue. This is about the way black people or African Americans are presented in the general society. This is what this is about. And so it's not offensive to them because it's okay. And everything they've done up until this point has proven that to them. You can have this map up in the diner, and you can go buy a map, which, say, at the craft store, and it's kind of like, you know, hey, I got this map, and it's so wonderful, and it's so great. But on the other side of that, as an African American, it's not so wonderful. It's not so great to hear these names every single day.
That's why I think there's something really interesting and valuable and complex about the husband and wife, the Sotus Point historian and his wife. Tell me again their names.
Bruce Farrington and Edie Farrington.
I mean, the car ride that Veronica let us listen to, the conversation that was happening there, really organically, it does not want to think of people as sort of bad. And I get why. I mean, like, people don't want to think of people as bad. People don't want to think of their history as sort of, you know, hurtful or problematic or even more ugly than that. But I think that we have to acknowledge the complexity. Like, the Nyers were really sweet to you, right? They were very nice people to you in person, right?
Yes.
Yeah, nice people. But you can hold views that either show indifference to the pain of others or perpetuate, I think. And you can be lovely neighbors, and you can help people build things, and you can do really sweet things for people and still hold these views that hurt people. And I think the complexity is really on display in this report. I mean, how did you feel listening to that?
As you said that, I think that there would have been a different perspective if there was someone that had dark color skin that came up and asked that same question. It'd be very different. They were nice to you. They were sweet to you. But if I came and knocked up on their door and did that, I'd get the police called on me. That's what we're talking about. So, yeah, it's all nice and sweet and so loving and so great. But you know what? When I have these conversations with people, it's not so nice and it's not so sweet. And basically, they tell me I'm dumb and stupid and I don't know what I'm talking about. And I just need to go away and stop making a big deal out of nothing. So it's not so nice and sweet to me.
They tell you that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, I think that there is a lack of understanding about race relations in general, and that people say, you know, hey, I don't want to let it be known that I use the N-word. So I've got black neighbors. My son married a black girl, and they say all these things, but to say those things in itself means something. And so I think that's what we really need to be talking about. There's a difference.
So to the historian on the panel here, that's a lot of work to do to help, I think, people see our collective history, who has been oppressed, what it has meant, mm-hmm. what it means about us now. Because, Michael, so often you'll hear people say, well, I'm not the one who named that hill. I'm not the one who owned slaves. I wouldn't have denied service at a restaurant. We're having renewed conversations at the national level at times about reparations.
Yeah.
Those are not easy conversations for people. It carries a lot of pain. And I think Edie's comments reflect a well-intended but still very real desire for people to be like, well, I wasn't me. I wasn't that bad. We're not bad people. We're good people. And grappling with the dichotomy of maybe so, but also look at our history. How does a historian navigate that?
Well, there's always a tension between myth and history, and historians always navigate that, and it's fraught, right? When you tangle with myth, you get hate mail. People get quite upset. I'm not surprised at all by Eric's story. Not at all. It happens all the time. Look, you know, just in the snippets you heard here, and you know, a couple of my former students raised points, you know, and one of them said, look, in Canada, it's routine to acknowledge that you're on Indigenous ground. And I'll give you one example of this pained history, right? I own a house in Rochester. You probably are homeowners, some of you. If you own land, right, you own land that once belonged to Native peoples, right? So whether or not you were a good person or not, your ancestors were angels or devils, you today benefit through a process of Indian dispossession, right? New York couldn't become the Empire State without a systematic program of Indian dispossession. The clips that you showed, Veronica, were fantastic because a number of your guests mentioned the Underground Railroad. Right, and that's the African American story where white people get to be the good guys, mm-hmm. right? They're helping people hide. But in those clips, you got bounty hunters mentioned by those people, right? People who were enforcing the Fugitive Slave Act, a fundamentally corrupt and horrible, awful law. You have one of the founders. This is on the SOTUS website. Tell me his name again. Peregrine Fitzhugh, one of those great Southern planter names. Peregrine Fitzhugh migrated to SOTUS, one of the founders of SOTUS, with 40 slaves. So one of my students pointed this out to me today. An email goes, make sure you mention Peregrine Fitzhugh, right, who migrated up to SOTUS with his 40 slaves from Maryland. That slavery is part of the history of Wayne County. It's part of the history of upstate New York. It's a story we need to tell. As a historian, you ask questions, you make your case, you do what Veronica did, ask people to tell you their stories. And I'm sure there's fascinating stuff you were shown in the town historian's office and the county historian's office. There's so many stories to tell, and you just keep plugging away.
I know that I kind of want to talk also, while we still have time, about the process of a responsible renaming, because the process of renaming these places, it's an arduous process, but it can be done. And I want to talk to Eric, to you too, about how, about reclaiming the history of the area in, say, maybe the dedication of the Maxwell settlement, if you wanted to talk about that a little bit, and kind of redefining the history of the area.
Ware worked extensively to redefine that and to make the history known. We had a tremendous event where we celebrated that history, and the descendants came and...
Well, can you explain what the Maxwell settlement was? Because before I report on the story, I had no idea what it was.
The Maxwell settlement was a history of an African-American community that lived in the area. It was a rich, rich community. At the celebration event that we did, I met lots of descendants who talked about their ancestors that went back generations and generations. They were doctors and lawyers and people who had their entire families live on that land, and they've been there for generations. And I think that Ware worked to try to make that more known, to put up a plaque, and to make that accessible to the community at large about what that was and the rich history that's involved in that. And at the event that we had to celebrate that, there were it started out something we thought wasn't going to be as large as it was, but it started to grow, and interest started to increase for people wanting to know about this. And it was an absolutely wonderful, marvelous event to stand in a room with 125 people who are descendants of people from the Maxwell settlement. It was absolutely marvelous.
Wow. Can I read a little bit of feedback from listeners, if you
don't
mind?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure.
Because I think people have been really moved by this. Andy says, Evan and Veronica, I just checked. You're right. Google Maps does have the point in Wolcott, for example, labeled as Negro Head. I had no idea. Amazing to think place names like this still exist today. Thank you for this discussion, because people need to be aware of this phenomenon. And Magnus says, great show. Really appreciating this conversation. But, you know, I could probably take a couple of emails or phone calls from people who have a different point of view.
I do want to say that he does follow up by saying the word freedom is now used from everything from these instances all the way up to freedom fries and freedom molecules. I am for changing racist terms, but be creative, people.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I mean, and, you know, I'll just turn to Eric just briefly on this, because, you know, on the subject of renaming or re-understanding history, just turning Negro Hill into Freedom Hill, I'm not sure fixes or so.
I'm not sure it fixes it either. I think that we need to honor the rich heritage of what it was. Maxwell Settlement had a rich history that needs to be honored, that people need to know about. And just changing that doesn't really do that. So I think, you know, there needs to be a process where everybody who's affected by this can sit at the table and make sure that everybody has equal rights and equal voice to say, hey, listen, you know what? Freedom Hill isn't going to work for me, so let's talk about something else. Everybody needs to be present for that conversation.
Can I take a phone call? I'm going to go to Catherine in Fairport. Go ahead, Catherine.
Hi. I'm just repeating what some of the members have talked about, but I would just like to reiterate that in Rochester, we take pride that we were the site of the Underground Railroad. And I'm not talking about names of streets or buildings, but it's a wonderful thing that our predecessors helped people out. And so despite the names in SOTUS, SOTUS should be proud of the people who lived there years ago who helped the many people to freedom in Canada. If you change the name, I know it's a terrible dilemma here, because if you change the name, you kind of wipe out some of the pride of what people in SOTUS did hundreds of years ago to help people to Canada. And does that mean that we're going to forget all of that? So I share your dilemma. I just wanted to put in my two cents worth that it was a wonderful thing that the pioneers did to help the slaves free.
Okay. Catherine, thanks for the phone call. Some thoughts from that from our guests?
I want to remind listeners that earlier in the hour, we heard from a gentleman named Dan Lochner who lives on Negro Head Point. And he was one of the many people who I asked, you know, do you know the history or how it came to be? He didn't have an answer for that. He said he thought it was from sailor times. He wasn't really sure. Yeah. He had lived there for 30 years. I think that I obviously think that the historians would agree that remembering the history is important, but I think that it's an important question to ask whether or not the people who live there are actually remembering the history or if they just remember the name.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, we're talking about changing the name, but we're talking about much more than that. Peter Evans, in the first clip you played, talked about how everything's, and it was a clip in your broadcast, that everything's being torn down right and left, right? That we're tearing down history, we're tearing down the statues. That's a mischaracterization of what happened. We're having an in-depth discussion, not just about changing names, about the meaning of these names and how these names came to be and what these names mean and the effect of these names. This is a good historical discussion. So I don't think anyone's just talking about let's just change the name and forget, right? We change the name because it offends people, because it's terrible. Not a single person, I don't think you interviewed anyone in the clips you played that said, it's fine. I mean, one guy started that way, but generally they all came to acknowledge it's bad. Let's change it, but let's talk about this history, right? There are so many individuals, African-Americans settled in Wayne, whose stories we could tell, who could be a part of that community's history in a different way. We don't know about the people who settled on that point. There hasn't been significant studies of those communities. That's incredible and important stuff to do. So we change names. Great. Awesome. No one's suggesting that's the end of the road. Certainly no historian would say that.
Yeah, and so just a couple of observations that again, there's so much extraordinary stuff in the tapes there. First of all, when people are saying, look, you can't just throw out our history, you can't change the name, even if the name is hurtful. And they kind of give you this, well, even if it's bad, you know, we shouldn't change it. In 1963, 64, as Veronica reported, the federal government changed the maps. And the maps used to say the full N-word, N-word Hill, N-word Head Point, not Negro Hill. Negro Head Point. Were the same people saying we shouldn't change Negro Hill to Freedom Hill? Would they like it to have stayed N-word Hill? I suspect they will tell you no. And if the answer is no, then they are inconsistent on the point. The other point I would make is there's a gentleman you were speaking to, Veronica, who said he has not encountered anyone who says they're uncomfortable with the term. And you brought it up. You said, well, people might see they're uncomfortable. He said, I've never heard anyone say they're uncomfortable. People seem to be fine with it. I'm trying to remember which bit of tape that was.
It was from Negro Head Point.
The idea that someone made uncomfortable by a term, N-word Hill, is going to just voluntarily... Let's say you're one of four African Americans in an entire town of mostly white people in Wayne County. You're just going to go tell all the white people who've held all the power for years, by the way, that's not cool with me? I mean, Eric, is it automatic that someone who's uncomfortable is going to be expressing it?
Of course not, because to express that means you're going to cause trouble. You're going to be the troublemaker.
You put yourself at risk, I would think.
You put yourself at risk for a lot of different things and for people to come out against you. You've got all these people who disagree with you, and they're in power, and they're in control. This is about power and control, and those people who... it doesn't bother them. They don't care. Trying to tell me as an African-American male that it shouldn't bother me either. So you get to say what you want and do what you want. You get to tell me where to live. You get to tell me where to go. You get to tell me what jobs I can keep. And when I complain about it, then there's something wrong with me. This is what we're talking about. And again, I said earlier, you know, if I had went and did this article and knocked on some people's doors, there would have been, you would have seen another article in the news about me going to jail. That's the reality that we currently live in, and I think that's part of the discussion that we need to have.
I think it is important, again, to just be very clear that these conversations happen through the lens of white folks talking to another white person, you know? So I think that Eric's totally right in that I had a different conversation with these people than I think they might have if there was someone of color in the room.
I think it's a great point, and I'll close just by mentioning one of our listeners, Joel, just said, tuning in late, have you mentioned, and I don't even know if I should be careful saying the term, but the term squaw. Michael, just briefly, can you hit that? Because that also appears.
Veronica mentioned at the end of her story how Squaw Island in the Niagara River was renamed. That was an issue when I lived in Montana in the 1990s. It's a pejorative. It's viewed as a pejorative reference to women's anatomy, and for that reason, many Native American people have asked for places bearing that name to be renamed.
and probably should at least get at least a fair hearing when they make that request.
Yeah.
Our ignorance to the term isn't always a shield. Veronica, outstanding reporting. You want to offer some final thoughts as we close here?
Yeah, I just want to say that as far as I know, there are no efforts to make any major changes to these names, unless, Eric, if you could correct me if I'm wrong, if you guys are doing anything through WHERE.
We are always actively working to try to change those things, so there's not anything that has happened recently, mm-hmm. but we're always working to try to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so as far as I know, the last name change that I heard of was Squaw Island in the Niagara River. It was recently changed to Unity Island, and that was a decision that was made, and so far everyone seems okay with it.
I really appreciate the work you've done on this.
Thanks, Evan.
Thanks for coming in and sharing the tape, and I want to thank our guests who've been here this hour. Eric McNair is the Vice President of Wayne Action for Racial Equity. That's WHERE. Thank you, Eric. Thanks for sharing your perspective.
Thank you.
And Michael Oberg is the founder of the Geneseo Center for Local and Municipal History and a distinguished professor of history at SUNY Geneseo. The work continues. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Evan.
Rob Braden is the engineer, and Megan Mack is the producer of Connections. Wherever you are, whatever it's called, I hope you think about our history a little bit this afternoon, and have a beautiful day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Member-Supported Public Radio.